Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age. Hey everyone, Peter Crosby coming to you from the Digital Shelf Institute's Cape Cod office. Rob's on from the Berkshires. Hey Rob.
Hello.
So Rob, I thought we'd start today with direct to consumer, because there was some pretty big news this week. PepsiCo's snacks.com and pantryshop.com. But before we dive into that, which I can't wait to sort of, without any data at all, opine about its goodness or badness. I wondered what, this has been, online shopping, the latest data for April, which came out of Adobe, had said that, that online shopping was up 88% in April. Super exciting. And so those trends continue. And I just wondered, how have you been spending your D2C dollars in the last couple of months?
It's interesting you ask. I think my experience with this is probably similar to a lot of other people's, where things are not in stock on Amazon like they normally are. And so I've been looking other places to find them. And then things have not been in stock in the grocery store that we go to, and things have not been in stock everywhere. So, I mean, you see all these stats about like 70% of consumers are trying brands that they don't normally try. And it's because their preferred brand is not in stock and all this sort of stuff. What I've been finding is, in general, I buy a lot of products directly from the manufacturer. And I've been doing that even way more than I normally do during this time. So some kind of fun examples. First, I've been buying razors at CVS forever. I'm bald. I shave my head. And
wait, you're bald?
yeah, you know. It's probably because you can't see me because of the glare. It's just blind, right? So it turns out that Procter & Gamble has a subscription service for the Mach 3 razors that I use for my head. And it's free delivery and it's cheap and there's a discount for the first order. And so I said, man, I don't want to have to go to CVS to buy razors that often. I'm just now buying them directly from Gillette. And
are you doing the subscription model, or are you just, when you need it, you order it?
I did the subscription model. What I do is I don't really have much facial hair. So I just, I'm like a naked mole rat in terms of the amount of hair that I have. So I use the same razor all week, and then I'll shave my head on Saturday, and then I'll throw the razor out. So I'm like a very scheduled four razors a month kind of guy. So I just threw the subscription on there and set it and forget it and never have to think about it. And I mean, not to jump ahead to Pepsi, but Procter & Gamble is a giant CPG company, like Pepsi's a giant CPG company. And here I am moving my spend from retail direct to manufacturer is one of my very first purchases in quarantine. I thought that was an interesting example.
Yeah, we've been fortunate enough right now to get a second condo out here on the Cape. And so that requires some furniture. We enjoy sleeping, and so we thought we were investing in a king size bed. And just the Wayfair's, I don't know, I just couldn't get into it. And just, I think through Instagram, we had seen this brand called Thuma. And so we looked at that site, thuma.co. And we looked at the site. First of all, we are incapable of building things. And so I don't know about you, the process of setting up a normal bed with all of the Allen wrenches and all that stuff just like kills us. A lot of cursing. So we looked at Thuma, and it's a really cool bed. And I love, when we talk about D2C companies sort of having their philosophy, sort of what sets them apart, their sort of reason for being. And when you look at sort of their about page, they said, we set out to fix the bed, strip away everything unnecessary, functionalism, minimalism, luxury design, mindful of their environmental impact, drawing from Japanese craftsmanship. And what's really cool is that the whole thing only has two screws, which connect the mid rail to this, you know, to the center. And then everything else is just a dropping it in place, a sort of groove construction. And it looks beautiful. So Dave and I did a time-lapse photography of us putting it together and then the Casper mattress going off. So it was a double D to C whammy. And it's so comfortable and awesome. So that made us very happy.
Yeah,
but so I do have to mention, go ahead.
So I've got an example that might be useful for other people in this age where you're probably, your screen time usage has got to be near capacity, right? And this was a recommendation from Cal Newport's book, Digital Minimalism. Excellent book, by the way. And the recommendation was the Mouse Book Club. The Mouse books, they're excerpts from major books, and you get them every quarter and they're themed, and they're about the size and the shape of an iPhone. So the idea is you take one of these small books and you put it in your pocket with your phone. And so when you go to reach to your phone to distract yourself, your hand hits the book and you're reminded, maybe I should use my phone a little bit less. So you pull out the Mouse book and you read a few pages and then you get on with your life. And the first volume set that I got was an excerpt from Plato's The Gorgias Conversation, which is the first one I read. And I've never read any Plato before, and I thought it was just awesome. And then I read an excerpt from Julius Caesar's Commentaries, which I had read some of that way back in college, and it's been decades, and man, I really enjoyed it. And then next I've got some Cicero as the third one. They're like 40 or 50 pages. And so, you read them over a month or so, and it's been, it's been great. My wife's seen me reading them, and she even got in on it now.
So what are the moments where you will take the break to do it? Like, 'cause you're reaching for your phone, you see this instead, like, is it just maybe a couple of times a day, or how do you build the habit?
Or is it just for me, what I've been doing, 'cause everyone's in the same building that they wake up in all day long, right? I've been trying to leave my phone in a different room, and primarily it's so that I'm not checking my phone in front of my kids all the time. But the habit's still there. Your hand still goes to your pocket. Everyone's felt the phantom vibration or the phantom ring before. So mostly it's like, leave the phone somewhere else, have the book in my pocket, pick it up and read a couple pages. And as a benefit, my wife doesn't get annoyed at me for reading Plato in the same way that she'd get annoyed at me for being on my phone.
Yeah. I mean, how can you sort of upbraid someone for reading Plato? Yeah. That's hilarious. And I do note that, so it's mousebookclub.com. I do note on their homepage right now, the featured image is On the Duty of Civil Disobedience by Henry David Thoreau. So
yes,
someone's curating.
Yes. No, they're intentional. And Thoreau's, it's been a while since I've read some Thoreau, but
oh my God,
also worth it.
Yeah, for sure. So my other purchase on the simplicity and academia of yours is Johnsonville Sausage, and we don't usually talk about Salsify in the show, but they happen to have become a customer recently of Salsify, and one of their one of the things that was posted on Slack when we were sort of celebrating that they'd selected us was a picture of a Can't Spell Sausage Without USA t-shirt.
Yeah.
And so I clicked on that immediately and ended up with a seller named Huang Antoine. And I won't say his whole email, but it begins with Cuddlebug. And so I don't know who he is. Potentially even a she, I'm not sure. But I can't wait to get my t-shirt. It's in the mail now.
Yeah, that's just a great example of a brand driving further engagement with their consumer base.
Yeah.
I love Old Bay. I've been raised on Old Bay, and they released Zoom backgrounds for Old Bay. One of which is super cool. It's like you're crabbing off on the shore of Maryland, and there's Old Bay logos on it, and it's super cool. And I don't know, the t-shirts, the backgrounds, I think there's a lot to that for brands that have the type of lifestyle loyalty that, you know, an old Bay does or a Johnsonville does. That's cool. That's a good purchase.
If you have consumers that are affectionate for your brand and are willing to share it on their chest or something, that's loyalty and it's viral marketing in the old ways. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So the big D2C news, let's move on to it this week. Frito-Lay, Pepsi going full D2C in a big way with sort of fancy expensive URLs that they managed to snag, snacks.com and pantryshop.com. Tell me a bit just some background on it. It isn't meant to replace their wholesale stuff, obviously, but one of the articles we read, Haley Savage in Retail Brew, you know, say they're offering an alternative that's friendly to blanket fort life. And also with the difficulty sometimes getting stuff through retail channels right now, they're kind of taking control of their own relationship with the consumer in a really big way.
Did you say blanket fort life?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
That's Haley. Haley's really coined it. And when I read that phrase, I thought, yeah, that's kind of what it is with your family and got the flashlight on and the blanket put over. And who wouldn't want to open up a Fritos snack assortment pack in that moment? So I thought it was really engaging, particularly pantryshop.com, which I thought they have a bunch of sort of curated categories of packs, and some of them are like priced $25 or $50. So they're like significant where you believe they could be making some money here, some profitability. They have Everyday Pantry, Rise and Shine, Snacking, Hydration, Protein, Workout and Recovery with Muscle Milk and stuff like that, and Family Favorites, which, I thought that in particular, that curation was really interesting. But and then when you read their mission on the site, it talks a lot about in this time of COVID. And so it's clearly something that they spun up quickly, but in a way that feels resonant with the times.
Yeah, so a few observations here. First of all, the fact that, and I read that they started from scratch and had this thing up in a month. And the fact that that's even possible just now just shows with focus, given the technology that exists today, how quickly you can spin up a major e-commerce site. I just think back to when we were at, I was at Endeca Technologies in the aughts, and we did the search and navigation for walmart.com and target.com and homedepot.com and a bunch of others. And standing up an e-commerce site back then, before cloud technology had really taken off, was really expensive and took a long time. You had to set up the servers and the whole thing was just a mess. And now Pepsi's going from zero to launch in 30 days. I mean, that's just an order of magnitude different. I don't know what platform they're using, Shopify, BigCommerce, one of those, but man, that's fast. The second thing is that they probably supply chain wise had been already making the investments to ship direct to consumer through fulfillment centers so that they could operate as their own 3P backstop for when Amazon goes out of stock and for other sites.
Yeah, Progressive Grocer had an interview with Pepsi's head of e-commerce, and they said that Pepsi's manufacturing centers are close to end consumers. So I think they must have enough manufacturing centers around where they can get where they can now guarantee 2-day shipping for most orders. So that's as impressive, a fulfillment capability as practically as Amazon.
Yeah. It's just great. So the detractors from this, and I'm not in the detractor camp, but the detractors for this don't understand how Pepsi could possibly make money on this. And you know that probably the cost of getting those snacks.com is not a cheap domain to get. I don't know what they pay for it, but man, there's no way that's cheap. So you got the cost of the domains, you've got the cost of setting this whole thing up. The margins on snack packs are, when you're picking and packing and shipping eaches or small numbers, are just probably not as good as shipping containers to Walmart fulfillment centers. So, you know, the detractors are just saying this is just no way that Pepsi's going to make money. And even if they do make money, it's going to be low volumes, because how many people are going to go to snacks.com versus Walmart, Amazon, Target, Kroger, to grocery store, and so on and so forth. Yeah. And so that's the bear case. It's kind of a why bother argument. You know what I mean? Yeah.
No, I just by coincidence was talking to the head of e-commerce from a competitor of PepsiCo's the other day, and he was saying that was sort of his, as they think about their D2C strategy, it's how do you want to play and where do you want to put your focus in terms of if you're going to do assortments and bundles, that, you know, making those work in your retail channels, and being able to make a profit there is maybe where they're putting their focus more than this kind of thing, because of you said, will these habits change enough to make it worthwhile?
I get the bear case, but I just don't agree with it. Yeah. And the reason is the future is not selling high volume products the way that you've done for the last 60 years. The future is a lot more volatile. And if Pepsi has, even if it's low volume, if they've got channels that people interact with, it'll enable them to launch experimental products and get market feedback without having to do that through a traditional channel. So if Pepsi, which has a wide variety of brands, is going to launch a new Frito-Lay flavor, they can just do it on their own anytime they want and just see what the reaction is.
Yeah.
And if the reaction's really strong, then guess what? They have a lot of data that they can bring to a grocer and say, guys, look, this is killing it, right?
Yeah.
It's like when McCormick launched Old Bay hot sauce on McCormick.com. It's not like McCormick.com is driving huge volumes for McCormick versus either their food service division or their spice, you know, the consumer division that sells spices to grocery stores and stuff like that. McCormick.com is not driving massive volumes. But the fact that the hot sauce sold out immediately gives them data that they can then use for negotiation with retailers and wholesale, right? So I think the Pepsi strategy of having a site where you get, even if it's not a big number, if it's just some number of people, you get the CRM data, you get the ability to launch and test, and you can, and you maintain your control of your destiny in a way.
Yep.
That's just not true if every single thing that you do has to be big volume. So I really like the strategy.
Yeah, and it also gives them not only control over their destiny, control over the experience, and they can test experiences and content and how they talk about it, and these sort of curations that then can easily be stood up. They have the content already, and, you know, modifying that or specializing it for any other particular retailer is then a quick tweak rather than starting from scratch.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, you could imagine also Pepsi doing things like adding a where to buy functionality on the site for if people just want to pick something up. And, you know, they're not sitting there trying to absolutely drive margin and drive huge volumes from snacks.com. I doubt that's the strategy. They just want people to be buying their brand. They just want people to be interacting with their brand as much as possible. And if their brand happens to be out of stock at a local grocer, they want people to be able to purchase it and know that there's a two-day fulfillment.
And sort of back to your point about agility, the fact that we now live in a time where if you have the will to do that and the focus, it actually can be accomplished. Whereas, you know, even as much as, I don't know, a year or two ago, I don't know whether that would have been, maybe not a year ago, but a couple of years ago, not too far out, it just wouldn't have been possible.
Well, the supply chain part alone is something that, you know, a lot of manufacturers have put effort into the last few years. But, you know, 5 years ago, very, very few of the majors could ship direct to consumer effectively at any type of scale.
Yeah.
Now, so all this aside, I would say that even if this doesn't work out for them in a year from now, they shut down snacks.com, they still own the domain snacks.com, and that thing will appreciate in value. It's fine. You know, if they get any traffic going to this thing at all, they could probably flip it to somebody else and make a profit. So I think It's good real estate, you know?
Oh man, I would love to know what they paid for that. I could be a fly on the wall in accounting at Pepsi.com.
Yeah, I mean, look, even when Sears was getting hammered, Sears could sell the real estate that it owned and then lease it back from the buyer and use that cash flow to maintain the company's lifeline. Like, real estate is valuable. And so snacks.com, pantryshop.com, that's good real estate. So, okay, kudos to them on the buys.
I'm trying to imagine the corporate conditions under which they would give up snacks.com to a competitor. That just, I think they're, but you never know, right?
Never know. Never know. But still, you know, they've got an asset that appreciates. So, yeah. You know, good on Pepsi. I like the strategy. I like the move. It's bold. I think it'll work out for them. I think time will tell whether they use it the way that I would use it in terms of testing the market and launching new products and doing it more often, but we'll see.
Yeah. I think it's a great sign, and a great sign again of the importance that we talk about so often on this program about brands needing to get agile, needing to build these capabilities so that they can test and learn. You know, go back to the episode we had with Mike Mamoudzis from Good Baby and his philosophy about how you test and learn, how you, they setting up particular products that are for a higher net worth customer and going direct with those to see if they can build those relationships and have more of that direct connection. But doing it over in the corner, and Pepsi's so big that Pantry Shop and snacks.com is over in a corner. But for somebody like Good Baby, a corner is a much smaller set of real estate, but they get to learn something. So I think this is something that every brand manufacturer ought to think through their strategy for how they want to build those relationships and get that data and then apply it across larger moments. And that takes infrastructure and process and people that are willing to be nimble. And I think it's an impressive example. So with that, we are done. We are going directly back to work. As always, check out digitalshelfsummit.salsify.com. For those of you that are interested, we recently released an episode with Voris eControl, who are experts on channel strategy and setting up marketplaces and applying the legal pressure to have brand control in marketplaces. Super episode, digitalshelfsummit.salsify.com. Please leave a review for either our selections in private label brands, in D2C brands, or for our shows. We'd love your feedback. And thanks as always for being part of our community.